on today's Run to the Top podcast.
My sign-up day was like the last day, so just sat there in line waiting for the time window opened up. So you get an acknowledgement, they got your name, and then you wait for them to say, okay, you're accepted. And once you get that acceptance email, it's time to party, right?
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. On today's episode, we are talking with Scott Mattingly, first-time participant in the Boston Marathon. Scott will tell us how he qualified, what his plans are for race day, and what this race means to him. A first time in Boston is, for many of us, a bucket list item. Let's listen to Scott's story as he awaits his first time running the legendary Boston Marathon. This podcast is brought to you by the newknee shop.com. Don't let pain keep you from completing your long runs, or worse, sideline you altogether. An innovative new product called New Knee can help. New Knee is designed specifically to relieve that dreaded runner's knee pain. Let New Knee help you get back to running without knee pain. Available today at newkneeshop.com. That's newkneeshop.com. Use code RC20 for a 20% discount. Welcome, Scott.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great to have you here. I know you must be nervous. I mean, not only are you getting interviewed right before your race, but you're just about to race one of the most well-known races in the world. So thank you for interviewing with me today. And what I thought we'd do is, rather than read a bio, let's just start with our four basic questions and move into your story of getting to this place where you qualified to run in the 2019 Boston Marathon. And we'll be doing so in just a few days. So let's start with the basics. Please share your current age, where you were born, where you are currently living, and how long you've been running.
Okay, so I'm 60 years old. Was 60 last November. Was born and raised in Catonsville, Maryland. And I'm currently still living in Catonsville, Maryland.
How long have you been running?
I've been training since 2006.
All right. Well, congratulations on, I'm guessing that maybe turning 60 and qualifying for Boston might have been one of your strategies right off, because, the times change a little bit with each 5 years, right?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. So there was an attempt prior to this, and I didn't quite make it. And there's quite a story around that. But yes, it was a 15-minute bump from being in the 55 to 59 qualifying group to the 60-year-old group. So my age actually helped me.
Yeah, indeed. I understand that completely, because I qualified at 60 and then I qualified again at 65, both, just feeling like, okay, this is a good goal for me personally. So I do want to say congratulations for qualifying. It is not easy to actually time qualify to get into the Boston Marathon, and you did it. And it is a huge step from just thinking about it to getting to where you are actually running fast enough to make it happen. So congratulations to you.
I appreciate that.
Oh yeah, totally. I'm there. I mean, I understand this. So let's start with a little of your history. Tell us about you, your family, your work, how you grew up, the things you do for fun, etc. Give us a little bit of a who Scott Mattingly really is.
So as I'm 60, I've been married for 39 years. My wife grew up in the same neighborhood. If you look down my back door, you could see her front door. But we really didn't actually meet until our senior year in high school, and we got married at 21, and we're still living in the same neighborhood. For those that don't know where Catonsville, Maryland is, it's just west of Baltimore. Each city's been in the news with all the floods. So I've got two children, one daughter, 36, one grandchild that'll be 8 in 2 days after Boston, and I've got a son that is 30, They both live in the same neighborhood. My daughter and grandson live with us, so I have them with me every single day, and it's a happy life.
Yeah. Now, is your family, they must have been behind you for you to have the time to be able to do this training. Is that true?
Well, you know, it's not only a stress on the person doing the run and the training itself, but it's there's stress on the family, too, because there's a lot of time involved.
Right.
For me, it was not only just the running piece of it, but there was other parts of it as well that it took time. And, you know, Mom, you're tired often. So it does put a stress on the family, but they were behind me the whole way. And, you know, I mean, even down to my wife washing my basket for dirty running clothes every couple of days. So I really appreciate what they've done for me.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, you know, I mean, you've got a regular life there with family and work and all of those things. So again, I think a lot of our listeners are really going to relate to this. This is different than being a paid elite runner or someone who truly makes this their profession. So yeah, you got to balance a lot of things.
Yeah, my work life, I'm a director of distribution for a regional janitorial sanitation supply distributor in the Washington, D.C. area. So I've been here for 6 years, and I kind of love the operations background, so that's where I've spent all of my working career in distribution.
And what, I know you said you started running in 2006, so what kinds of activities were you involved before you started running?
So I've always done something some sports activity. When I was a kid, I loved baseball. I played baseball. Mm-hmm. I mean, every waking minute I had, I was terrible at it. So I could catch and throw, but I couldn't hit the ball to save my life. But I just absolutely loved the game. So, I mean, in my neighborhood growing up, we had wiffle ball games, and then we went up to the schoolyard and played, pick up baseball games. And, you know, I loved all the sports. When I wasn't playing, I was listening to them on the radio, and but I was never really good at any of them.
What got you started in running?
Well, I ran in 10th grade in high school, so I was played basketball all the time in high school, and my 10th grade biology teacher talked me into going out for the cross country team, telling me it would get me in shape for basketball.
I see.
So I ran for the cross country team. The problem was it took away from my basketball, and I did not make the team.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. So that was my first venture into running. And then, you know, through other sports, after high school, I got into bodybuilding for a short period. I did martial arts for a couple of years and ran off and on through that just to keep in shape. But I really didn't get into regular running until 2000.
You know, a good thing about running, I think actually two good things. One is it's so convenient because you can run from anywhere. So that makes it time efficient. And then the other is that you don't really have to be great at it to be able to enjoy it and to make it work for you as a fitness tool.
I agree. Running is a little bit different for everybody that does it, unless you're an elite. So it means something different to everybody.
Right.
Back in 2006, I weighed 250 pounds and I was totally immersed in work and working 12 hours a day, sometimes 6-7 days a week. And I just got so far out of shape. And it was between my son's junior and senior year in high school. And he was a pretty successful runner in high school and making it to state indoor and cross country. And he just didn't have any motivation. And I was very out of shape. So I decided I was going to try to run to get him motivated and lose some weight. And I started running. And I mean, I literally could not run up my cul-de-sac, which is about 80 yards, without walking.
Yeah. Wow.
And I've been running ever since. He still runs off and on. He wound up getting motivated to have a good year. And I've, like I said, I've been running ever since. So he was my first motivation.
Interesting. Now, so moving on to Boston, because I know from your bio that you were running like 5 and 10 Ks for quite a while. What motivated you to try and qualify for Boston?
I guess looking for the next Boston is probably the famous marathon in the world. And I tried a couple marathons early on, and they were tough. And I got to the point where I kind of transitioned out of, you know, the 15 to 20 some miles a week to want to run a little bit further. And, I did a couple half marathons and I liked that. And then Boston, I just kind of set my goals as I got older. I said, well, I want to do Boston one time before I'm just too old to qualify or something breaks down on me and I just can't do it. So mm-hmm. I set my sights on that. Probably in 2014 is really when I zeroed in on it.
Oh, okay. So not very long. And you said that you tried to qualify before this successful attempt. So would you mind talking about that a little bit? What happened during that failed attempt?
So 2015, I ran the Richmond Marathon. It was the first marathon I actually ran for time. And my goal there was under 4 hours.
Okay.
So, and I succeeded in that. So I ran a 3:56:30, I think, in Richmond. And I had a pretty good run. I had a few cramping in the later miles. I think around mile 24, I was struggling some, and I think everybody does.
Yeah.
So then after that, the qualifying time for my age was 3:40. And I said, well, you know, I'm under four. I might as well go for Boston at this point. So mm-hmm. set my sights on the Lehigh Valley Marathon in September. And I think that was probably the last marathon before Boston signup. So if you qualify there, it's your last shot to qualify the following April's Boston. So I trained
right.
for that. So I started training for that in the first part of May. Mm-hmm. I had 20 plus mile runs during that training period, and with 22 being the longest. Didn't do anything more than just running a lot of miles and those 5 long runs. So, I mean, my basic week was 6 days of running. I do a long run of 15 plus on the weekends. Every other weekend or every third weekend will be a 20 plus, but then I'd pick like a 10 mile or middle of the week. And I didn't have the greatest training for that. It was all my training was middle of the summer. When I wound up getting to Lehigh, it was like 80 degrees in the morning. And I had a very rough time. So I wound up spending 2 nights in the hospital, dehydrated.
Wow.
Yeah. Had to stop at mile 14, very lightheaded, blood pressure shooting up and down. And they took me to the hospital. My wife and my son were there. Of course, they were upset because the hospital thought I was having a heart attack.
Yeah.
And it wound up being dehydrated. So I did not complete that race. And as a matter of fact, it probably would have been tough because that was a race where the you cross a railroad track. So the train came across and it cost
my God.
Several hundred runners like 7 minutes on their time.
Yeah.
Of course, Boston is very friendly when it comes to giving passes on those kind of things. So I don't know if I would have got caught in that or not if I was running well. But I did learn a big lesson from there other than hydrating.
Mm-hmm.
Was that don't go out too fast. Because I did, looking back at my times, I was probably 15 to 20 seconds too fast.
Yeah.
And it starts at, it's a downhill run at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Anybody that's mm-hmm. run it would know that. But I went out way too fast and it was way mm-hmm. too hot. And I sweat a lot. So I basically just ran myself to where I couldn't run anymore. And I I had to shut down. So that was my sale. That
you learned a hell of a lot. I mean, that's part of what comes out of these, and I'm glad that you lived through it. So you don't have to just give up and try again, right?
Right. So the next one I picked a little later in the fall. So it was end of November, the Saturday after Thanksgiving in 2017, which is where I actually qualified. So it was a little later. My training cycle extended more into the cooler weather. And I believe that helped me quite a bit because, one of the issues I have is I guess, for lack of a better term, I'm an extreme sweater and I'll lose double digit weight during a long run.
Wow. Yeah. Well, now I was going to talk to you a bit about the weather at Boston because I don't know, it'd still be long-term forecast, but what are they forecasting for Boston this year?
About 20 times already, right? Yeah, they're calling for mid-50s daytime and mid-40s early on and with a 40% of rain and 13-mile-an-hour winds. Now, I'm not sure what direction the winds are. I'm hoping they're going to push us towards Boston.
Okay, well, I'll keep my fingers crossed on that.
I haven't checked it yet, so.
Yeah. Better. It's better this because this is too soon. I mean, you've got to plan that. I'm going to ask you about what you're going to be wearing in Boston. And, that's part of you have to plan for the different kinds of weather. But let's stay pre-race. And what and how did you train for this successful venture in addition to what was the qualifying time that you had to meet to be able to qualify at 60?
So my qualifying race, again, I started in May, and for that one, I had 720-plus runs that period, and then 22 would be my longest. Again, I spread the 20-plus like every 3 weeks until the last two. So I started my taper earlier than normal. So I started my taper November 1st. I had like almost a four-week taper, but I had 220-mile runs in October that absolutely built my confidence. And
nice.
That's another thing I learned. So those confidence building runs are important, and they're more important when they're closer to race day.
Yeah.
And I averaged during that course probably 50 to 65 miles, peaking out in the mid 60s. I think I had 3 weeks with 63 to 65 miles.
Uh-huh. Were you training with other people or were you training by yourself?
I, the beginning, yes. The end, my long runs were by myself.
Okay.
I am a member of a running group where we run three times a week. And typically I'll run one to two times with them. And there's just a wide range of runners in that group with some very, very fast people that are, I guess you would say they were national level in their age group. And then some people that just enjoy the group and going out running. And I've got a very large circle of very influential and experienced runners that I've been lucky enough to gain a lot of knowledge and get a lot of guidance out of.
Yeah. And it keeps you motivated too. I mean, you kind of need to show up because they'll give you a bad time if you don't. Plus a lot of them are counting on you to be able to run with.
That's true.
Yeah. Now tell me about your actual training. Were you doing any kind of speed, tempo, varied paces, or were you just running, LSD?
I would say mostly LSD. I did some interval training, some Yasso 800s and hill repeats in the middle of that. But I got injured probably in middle, late August doing intervals. So I kind of cut them out of the mix. And the last 2 months of training was just miles.
Miles.
Yes.
And
so I had
6 days a week,
like a week and a half, and then I started back up, and I just stuck with miles. And then for really good, two really good 20-mile runs that the first part of October. My qualifying pace was 8:44.
Okay.
So my first 20 miler in October, I averaged 8:45 for that 20 miles. And that gave me a lot of confidence.
Indeed.
That was actually on the course that I was going to run to qualify. So that helped too. And then the very last weekend of October, I ran another 20 and I averaged 8:22 for that 20 miles. So at that point, I knew I had it in the bank. Still had to do it, but my confidence was very high.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrific. Now, that, of course, at that point, so close to the race, you really have to watch that you don't get sick and, you know, that you're rested, and the mental game is a big part of it at that point.
Yeah. So a couple things I've got going on. The mental game is probably one of my Achilles heels. So those two runs, I knew I could do it at that point, and I held on to that feeling all the way through November waiting for race day. And of course, I ran, I think, you know, 12 and 15 milers and a couple 10 milers up to race day and did pretty well on those that were in the same pace range. So,
Well, that's terrific. Now, what was your finishing time in your qualifying race?
3:49.08.
And what was the time that you needed to qualify?
So the qualifying time at that time was 3:55 for 60-year-old. So I was 59, but I would be racing Boston at 60. So the qualifying time was 3:55. So I set a goal. We're looking at the people in my running group. We usually have 20 to 25 people going up there. And looking at the buffer they had was at that time, I think it was 2.5 minutes. So I wanted to come in at 3:50, give myself a 5-minute buffer to have enough time to qualify. And, and they actually wound up changing it to 3:50. So it was good I came in under 3:50 at that 3:49.08. So I kind of squeaked in with a little bit less than a minute in the bank.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I had a friend who's same age as I am. And when I qualified, there was a bigger time limit. I don't remember what it was now, but she didn't qualify. It was about a 15-minute buffer, and she didn't make it. She would have made it the year I ran, but she didn't make it the year she ran. Now, actually registering, what happened with, you know, you've qualified, you've got that part together, and then how did you actually go about getting registered? Because that's a challenge in itself.
So the Boston has so many people signing up, so they do it in waves based on the amount of time you qualified, your qualifying time range. So for those that are, I can't remember exactly, from 2:30 to 2:45, you know, you have these days. And then my sign-up day was like the last day, so just sat there online waiting until the time window opened up. And then I just went in and signed up, and then you wait. So you get an acknowledgement. They got your name, and then you wait for them to say, okay, you're accepted. And, you know, it's once you get that acceptance email, it's time to party, right?
Right. Wow. Lots of anxiety, lots of work, and of course, lots of congratulations for getting to that point. So now, do you have other people that you're going to be running with, or are you running again, pretty much on your own?
Well, I've got in our running group, our circle of friends, there's, like I said, there's over 20 people that are going. Some are flying up, some are driving up. Some are taking the train. Most of the folks that are going, I'm actually the slowest of the group going. I'm in Corral 3, Wave 7. So one of my close running friends is in the same corral, but I'm the same corral, but an earlier wave. And then there's one lady, she's in the fourth corral. But most of my group is in the earlier waves. Wave 1 and 2. And we got some very, like I said, we got some very fast runners in our group, just under 3 hours and right around the 3-hour mark. So we'll all try to meet up there at different places. And we've got, after the race, we're probably going to try to meet up as many as we can. With the race so spread out, it's kind of hard to do. And people trying to get out of town. So we'll have different meetup areas, and I'm certain of us will meet up, and others we probably will miss because of other plans.
Yeah, totally. So the logistics must be quite complicated. So what are you wearing? What are you, kind of go through all of the pieces, and if weather's bad, talk about, what you'd be doing to make that happen. And then also about nutrition, and, like to know as much as you're willing to share.
Okay. So again, I've got a lot of experienced friends, and a close friend of mine has been up there. I think this is his 10th time as well. So he's been schooling me pretty hard to be prepared for everything. So I can't give you exactly what I'm going to wear because depending on the weather, but I'm going to take a little bit of everything. So I'll probably, if the weather stays dry and in the low 40s, I'll probably just wear a pair of shorts and a t-shirt. I may wear arm sleeves that can, I can throw them away if it gets warmer. Right. I'll probably wear a ball cap and throw that off. If it's raining and chilly, I'll wear a water repellent jacket that I have, a Brooks jacket that's water repellent, and I'll probably wear a wool cap. I'll throw that off. Everything will be disposable except my shorts and t-shirt and shoes. So, but I'll take a wide range of stuff, even running tights if it's in the low 30s. But when I qualified for NCR, it was 38 degrees, and I ran the first 7 miles. I had a wool cap on, arm sleeves, a short sleeve shirt, and shorts. And I threw the wool hat off at mile 7, and I ran the rest of the way like that, and that was fine.
Yeah, that can be a really comfortable temperature to run in if you don't have moisture or too much wind.
Yeah, it was perfect. But I would suggest that lay your stuff out ahead of time, have every scenario taken care of, because you don't know what you're going to hit up there. I mean, even weather can change overnight, so be prepared for everything.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan. But of course, that also means then that if you're going to be throwing stuff away, you don't want to take that favorite cap or those really expensive, rain chaps or whatever. So that's something to consider too, right?
Absolutely. So there's two areas. So in the waiting area before you go to your corral, you want to have a set of throwaway clothes that you'll just stay warming because you're not active, right? So you could be there for a couple hours. So wear that. And then during the race, the stuff that you don't want to have anything that has any emotional attachment to you. So be soft. If you think you're going to discard, don't have any emotional attachment to it because you're not getting it back.
Now, what about shoes? Are you going to have more than one kind of shoe in case it's raining, or what are you planning on wearing on your feet?
I'm going to wear a pair of throwaway shoes, an old pair of running shoes in the waiting area. And then once I get ready to go to the corral to start, I will discard them and put my actual running shoes on. But I don't wear anything different, whether it rains or is dry. I do wear a pair of Dry Max socks. Seems to be the best pair of socks I've wore on these long runs. And they're for wet weather, but they work really well in dry weather. And in the summertime and when it's warm, I'm never dry anyway. So they're really good at keeping blisters and friction down in your shoes. So
interesting.
In the race.
And what brand and model of shoes are you wearing?
I currently wear Hukas.
Okay.
So the shoe I'm wearing is the Nepali, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but that's basically Hukas second version of what the Clifton 3 was.
Okay.
So it's really a Clifton 3. I guess they got so much feedback when they went to Clifton 4, the difference, that they remade the 3 into the Nepali, and that's what I've that's what I've been running in for this. But I started off originally in Brooks, and I wound up getting a neuroma in my foot. So I had to find a way to keep running. And the Clifton's, they're soft, the way they're soft on the feet, and help me get this period. And I've been with them ever since. Well, I think it's Hoka One One, but...
Hoka One One, right. Yeah, I just, I actually did an interview not too long ago with Ben Rosario. He's the coach of the Hoka One One Northern Arizona elite team. So we were talking Hoka. So, and I did hear an interview. I wasn't involved in it, but it was on Run to the Top of the Hoka president. Can't remember his name now. This was a while ago, but he said that, you know, a lot of times, and I think especially for those of us as we age, that extra padding in the shoe can make a huge difference. And they've made them so light now that, you know, you're not picking up a piece of cement every time you move your feet.
Well, yeah, I can only speak for the Clifton's. I also have a pair of the, their trail shoes, which are very nice, but they're a little bit heavier.
Right.
I know that the model I wear is about 2 ounces lighter than like the Brooks Ghost or the Glycerin that I was wearing in the past. They're actually lighter, and they're like running in bedroom slippers. So if you like, it's worth a try if you have a lot of feet problems, I would say.
I agree. I have a pair of Hokas and I'm really happy with them. I've run in everything, you know, minimal all the way up to these well-padded Hokas, but I like my Hokas. They're good. So let's talk race strategy. What have you decided you're going to do on this course? And have you ever actually run parts of the Boston course or the whole Boston course as a training run?
Never. I've been up in the Boston area many times to work, but I've never been on the Boston course at all. So it'll be my first time. My plan originally was to run Boston. That's the bucket list, and move on, because, you know, one day I'd probably like to run New York or Chicago or one of the other big ones.
Right.
So I'm going into this with an open mind, because I got a late start in my training for this. I was injured for about 8 weeks in November of last year, and I really didn't start training. I actually couldn't even run till the week between Christmas and New Year's. So I've got about 14 weeks of training in, and so I don't know what to expect. I've done 2 20-milers, and the last one was 21, so shorter than my past experience as far as my longest run, and honestly, that one was no fun. my original plan was to qualify, go, and have fun. So I'm kind of sticking with that. So I'm probably going to start out conservative for two reasons. One is it's downhill, so you don't want to get pulled into going too fast.
Right.
And, you know, do the old I'm going to bank some time routine, because it's, you know, it's going to hit you sooner or later. So I'm probably going to go out conservative and about mile 16, mile 18, see how I feel. And then, you know, if I got plenty in the tank, I'll hammer it. If I don't, I'll finish it. So, and the goal is to finish.
Yeah. That's a really good goal. Have some fun.
Yeah.
And
it was originally about the experience anyway. So, you know, if you're for people that go out and race, you know, yeah, you get the experience, but, you know, you're racing too. So I think you lose some of that ambiance during the race. And I want to take it all in, because, like I said, it really was a bucket list item. So, you know, I'm really excited about going and anxious at the same time. And little concerned. I only had about 14 weeks of training, but, you know, it is what it is.
And you know you can finish it. you've run marathons, you've qualified to get there. So, you know, that mental part of it should be reassuring. You know, you can get to the finish line. The racing part, there's so many variables on the day. And as you said, you were injured. So, you know, lots of variables like that. But you got yourself to the starting line of the Boston Marathon. Very cool.
Yes. Yep. Yep. And like I said, I'm extremely excited. And I don't think any race I've been into can match the excitement of just qualifying and getting your acceptance and being able to go. I don't think anything's matched that I've done in any kind of sports. So it's something I'll probably never forget. And my wife and my son are going up with me to help me through the ins and outs of getting where I need to get and all that. I got the family with me, so we're staying right around mile 16. So I'll see them when I come through there, and then the next time I'll see them, we'll be somewhere around the finish line.
That is so cool. Well, what a wonderful experience! And as you said, it's not just you; it is the family that is behind the runner, and that's a big deal. I'm sure they're very excited for you as well.
Yeah, and it's get to experience it together, and we're all hoping that it's a better experience than it was at Lehigh, because that was no fun.
Or last year at the Boston Marathon.
True.
You weren't there, but let's hope you have better weather than that.
But you know, anybody that ran that marathon, that particular day, nobody will ever forget, because it's probably one of the two worst weather experiences that anybody's ever had there. So that would be a very memorable one.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, for people to say I made it through Boston 2018
Most of the elites dropped out, and the regular running, right?
Yep, indeed. Well, you're going to have a bunch of us cheering you on from the sidelines, because, you know, I will definitely be thinking about you, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be thinking about you. So just remember, if you need a little extra energy, just, you know, dig into all the listeners on this podcast that'll be rooting for you.
I'll take any help I can get.
Well, we are going to be changing gears here and moving into the final kick. So is there anything else that you want to share with us about Boston before we change gears?
Well, I you know, you asked me earlier about nutrition. I think we missed that. So I am trying something a little bit new this time. So in the past, I've done the traditional goos and energy drinks, and I've kind of switched away from that to a different product. Don't know if I can name on here, but it seems to be working really well. And then using goos towards the last 5 or 6 miles for that instant sugar energy jump. So I'm using something that sustains the carbohydrate flow through your system a little bit more steady than a goo, where you get that spike and then you drop and then you got to, you know, take another goo in, and it has a tendency to wreak havoc on your stomach. This has been working well.
So what is the product that you're using?
So I actually took a coaching plan for the first time, because I was so short, and I signed up for the McMillan running plan, and they advertised the UCAN product, and I think Mev uses it.
Right.
So I've tried that over 4 runs, and it seems to do what it says. Get that sustained energy, and you don't get those drops where you got to pump a goo in your mouth and get that spike. So,
and then
suggested like the last 10K to start switching over to the goo. So that'll give you those spikes that you need to finish. So that's what I've been doing, and hoping it works well for me. So, and then in between, the one thing that does, it's like, depending on what consistency you mix it at, you can get thirsty. So, you know, there's plenty of water stops along the way, so you don't have to actually carry water. So you can use the water stops and drink this stuff every 30 to 45 minutes during the course of a race, and you get that level energy flow. So I'm hoping that helps me.
It's time to lock in your 2019 race schedule and lace up your favorite running shoes. Don't let that dreaded runner's knee pain keep you from reaching the finish line this season. Take action with New Knee. New Knee is an innovative new product designed to provide immediate relief of runner's knee symptoms. New Knee is the direct result of engineer and two-time Ironman Mike Emmerling's own five-year struggle with runner's knee. Unable to get relief from other remedies, Mike came up with his own solution. Unlike other knee sleeves and supports that use compression, New Knee's unique design relieves the pressure that each stride places on your kneecap. And the research reveals if you relieve the pressure, you will relieve the pain. New Knee has delivered immediate relief for runners from coast to coast who have struggled with knee pain. It's even been five-star rated by running injury specialist Dr. Ben Shadow. Even Pro Football Hall of Fame running back Thurman Thomas uses New Knee to stay fit and active. That's how effective it is. Founder Mike Emmerling receives weekly rave emails from runners like Aubrey, who said, quote, "I had a big race approaching and was experiencing knee pain during my long runs. I ordered New Knee and it worked great. No pain. I will be using New Knee on all of my long runs," unquote. Don't let knee pain slow you down. Let New Knee help you get back to running without knee pain. You can stop runner's knee in its tracks by going to thenewkneeshop.com. That's New Knee, NUNEESHOP.com. Use code RC20 for a 20% discount. All right. So a favorite local training run. So tell us enough. You're in Catsonville, Maryland. Tell us enough that our readers could actually find it and be able to, you know, do a run.
So Catonsville, like I said earlier, is just west of Baltimore and just east of Ellicott City, Maryland. All you have to do is Google Ellicott City. But my favorite place to run is Patapsco State Park. And it's right on that Baltimore County, Howard County line. It's 14,000 acres. And the area in my neighborhood is the Avalon, Glen Artney, and Orange Grove area. And It's got a mix of trails and asphalt running areas. It's, you know, for families, you got picnic areas, you got playgrounds. It's very accessible to anybody that wants to come. They have been doing some work there. There was a dam right in the middle of these three areas that they've taken out over the past winter. So they did have a asphalt trail there that they've taken out that they're going to put back. So it's probably another year before that gets in. But you can run into the park off of Route 1 in the Arbutus area. And there's an entrance there, and there's plenty of parking. But there's probably in that one area, there's probably 27 to 30 miles of actual trail.
Wow. And
it's for everybody. So for hiking, for runners, there's bikers that use these trails. It's cool. And areas where, you know, it's a little more dynamic as far as what you're going to be running on, but it's very well used. They got an area called Cascade Falls in the park there that is very nice. So I would recommend it. Anybody in the area, just Google Patapsco State Park, the Avalon area, and you'll find your way to it. It's well worth it. It's beautiful in the fall when the leaves are changing. There's deer. They have some coyote sightings there. They've had a few black bear sightings and turkey sightings. So there's plenty of wildlife.
Yeah. Wow. Well, this is one of the most fun parts of the interviews for me, is finding out these different running spots all over the country. You know, otherwise you just don't even know how to look them up a lot of times. So thanks for sharing that. So question two here is a recommended book, research, or video on running marathons or the Boston Marathon. What's, you know, what's your favorite reading right now?
Lately, I've been doing a lot of reading on brain training because that's one of my Achilles heels, that I start to question myself in middle races. So this isn't exactly about Boston Marathon, but I can recommend Brain Training for Runners. That's by Matt Fitzgerald. And it focuses on a lot of perception of effort during the run, and some experiments have been done and things that you can actually do yourself to try to train your brain to reduce the perception of your effort, which keeps you going at the pace you need to go. Another book that I'd read was Let Your Mind Run. That's by Dina Castor. And I guess her whole premise is the same type of thing, your perception of running, but when you're about to hit the wall, and just keeping a positive outlook during those runs and how that helps you get through the hard spots. Because anybody that's done long distance running or hard 5Ks or anything like that knows that there's always a spot when you're like, ugh, I don't know if I'm going to make it or not. So that really helps.
Yeah, everybody's talking about brain training these days. That seems to be another area. Nutrition and brain training seem to be new things that people are looking into much more seriously as far as how to perform better.
Yeah.
It isn't just one leg in front of the other, unfortunately.
Right.
There's more to it. Well, Scott, this has been quite educational and really exciting to talk to you. So, you know, such a short time before the actual race. So are you okay with us following your progress on social media?
Absolutely. So first off, I really appreciate I thank you for asking me, but anybody wants to find me or follow me, I'm on Strava and social media through Facebook. So just look me up and I'll be there.
And that's Scott Mattingly, Mattingly. Did I get that right?
You got that right.
Okay. So we wish you the best of luck at Boston and in running for many years to come. There's so much more running out there besides Boston, but right now it's kind of at the top of most of our list. And thank you, our audience, for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. Please follow us at the Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook by going to runnersconnect.net/FB and subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. That way you can be notified every week when the new episode is published. And thank you, each of you, for listening. We'll be back next week with Ryan Hall, American record holder in the half marathon, Olympian, and Boston Marathon superstar. Find out what he is up to now. You may be surprised. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top, wishing you a great week of fitness and hoping for good weather for our Boston Marathon racers. So long, Scott.
See you later. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.